You are listening to KGVM 95.9 FM on radio or on KGVM.org internet. Welcome to Health and Happiness, a regular airing on KGVM here in Gallatin Valley. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We host this presentation to aid you, the listening audience, to find health and happiness. We thank Bob Wall, our radio engineer and guru, and we thank Kiyoshi Matsuyama for creating the opening melody for the program. The Montana Psychological Association's Public Education Committee was the motivation for starting this program a few years ago and still fully supports its efforts. As you listen to this program, remember it's the eve of Valentine's Day. Dr. Suzanne will now make the connection between the presentation and Valentine's Day. Dr. Suzanne.
Good evening. Harvard neuroscientists performed an 85-year-long study to determine the number one thing that makes us happy. The study started in 1938. Records were gathered from 724 participants from all over the world. And nope, the answer, it's not career achievement, it's not making money, it's not exercise or healthy diet. The answer they found after all those years, it's positive relationships. Those relationships, research is finding, make us happier and healthier and even help us live longer. Wow! Good news for Valentine's Day tomorrow. And we have some excellent help tonight. Dr. Michelle McKinney and Dr. Bill Ryan, two of the top Montana psychologists, are with us. Good evening, doctors. And how do we find this magic elixir for our lives?
Thank you, Suzanne and Arliss. Good evening.
I just left you with a pretty loaded question there.
You sure did.
And we know that each of us is different, and there's a variety of every kind in this world, but one thing is a speech-language pathologist, a bit of research that's one of my favorites. If we realize that each one of us entrains, that is, we have special cadences and rhythms to our speech and communication. And from the very onset, newborns within the first 2 days of birth begin to entrain with the cadences and the rhythms of their mother. And it's measurable how they evolve into being right that close, that part of their mother. And so closeness to another begins way early, and I think extends throughout life.
I think you're right.
And I'm now in training with you two to hear about what you would tell people out in the audience about romance, love.
Or being happy single.
Yeah.
Suzanne, I think good morning to
Bill.
To you three, actually. I appreciate being invited to attend this meeting. I think you're hitting on something very fundamental, and that's the fact of the matter is we start in connection at the time of conception. Some might even say before that. The connection occurs when the sperm and the egg meet. There is a connection at that point. Whether that develops into a relationship or not, that's a different phenomenon. But I think it's important to realize that the most fundamental experience that we have is connection. And we're a mammal. We're a herd mammal. We're born from a womb. And at that moment, the reality of the connection changes, but it doesn't lessen. One might say it only increases in a different dimension in that we're now in this world. And so it's just fundamental, as you said, between the mother and the child, that a relationship develops inherently. We're born to connect. And without connection, we suffer greatly, as you indicated earlier.
Absolutely. That connection in that long-term Harvard study was the significant thing they pulled from all of those years of tracking those people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there are some, I mean, those connections, of course, it is the eve of Valentine's Day, so there are romantic connections, and I think there are other really important connections that you and Bill are alluding to, is the family connections, the friend connections we're able to make over our lifetime, our connections with maybe with our coworkers, those kinds of meaningful connections. And I think there are some qualities of intimate relationships and healthy relationships, regardless of the context, that I think are common qualities that are really helpful in fostering deeper connections with other people.
Exactly. There's a wonderful researcher and writer called Yuri Bronfenbrenner. Arliss, what was his phrase?
Everybody needs someone who's crazy about him or her. I always like that quote I got from one of his writings.
Even just one teacher, parent, friend can make such a huge impact. And so when that's missing, you have Truman Capote writing about the Moore's murders. These two young men had no good connections that he could find when he traced their lifetimes in England. So we have to realize that each of us needs to find a connection, provide connection, maintain a connection, if I could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the people.
Yeah, I think that's an essential point. All existence, I think, is a result of connection. We only exist in connection. Even we exist in the connection with ourselves. We could say we exist in the connection with God, even. A more abstract connection. But we know we exist, even, simply because we connect. If we're not connected, we feel a lack of our own existence. It's deprived. And so one of the things that becomes clear for human beings, maybe for all mammals really, but for human beings, is we both need to love and be loved. And a lot of times people focus on the "I need to be loved." But the need to love is, in my mind, as strong as the need to be loved.
It's that's such a good point, Bill. Mm-hmm. I think all the same wonderful, helpful chemicals would be released when you're involved in doing a loving something for someone, as well as if somebody were doing that for you. So yes, I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
And taking it a step further, when you talked about abstract relationships, We had Mr. Cashman of Cashman's Nurseries on last year, and he talked about even our connection to the world around us and how positive that energy is. And another study that I read, in a greenhouse, you know how plants pronate to the sun. They will even turn and face the sun. But in this particular study, the plants also pronated to the human voice. And so that shows we're in touch not just with one another, but actually too with the world around us, perhaps.
Really interesting. Yeah. I think that's why people find nature so healing and nourishing.
Yes, Mr. Cashman was just a fountain of that kind of wisdom. And, you know, as we talk about this subject, what sort of things do you think contribute to a good relationship? What should we all perhaps be thinking or doing to enhance our relationships, maybe particularly on Valentine's Day?
Well, it's an excellent question, Suzanne, and I'm thinking about some of the research that I've looked at in preparation for this call. And there's a couple of key pieces that kept coming up. These are researchers who are looking at the science of relationships and how to make love last, but also how to be happy when you're single. And I think communication is one of the things that, you know, people might call us and looking for help with communication in their relationships. But it's a particular kind of communication that really seems to help. And that's honest communication and a willingness to have deep conversation. So not just talking about did this or that bill get paid, or are we taking the kids, who's taking the kids to the sports game or the school concert or what have you, but really deeper questions about your partner or your friend's hopes and feelings about things. And not only just positive things, but also difficult things, but a willingness to speak openly about some of those more deeper personal kinds of thoughts and feelings is one of the factors that really helps a relationship be healthy and be stronger over time.
That just makes good sense, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
When you all see people in your work, is there any one construct, item, topic that sticks out on why people come in when they're wanting to improve their relationships or to seek out advice on how to be happier?
Go ahead, Bill.
One of the things that that comes immediately to mind, Arliss, is vulnerability. When people come into therapies, often couples therapy, but it isn't, not necessarily, it could be individual too. They're talking about the need to connect and to develop or further develop good relationships and so forth. And one of the things that I, kind of a thread that runs through it, is the struggle that we all have with being vulnerable, with really opening up, similar to what Michelle just said about honesty. Honesty demands vulnerability, willingness, and it is a choice. And the willingness to be open and vulnerable is what develops closeness and deeper attachment. And we all struggle with that because we're both a predator and a prey, partly. You know, I mean, it's built into us to protect ourselves. And so we're often struggling with that in our relationships. And it's very primal in a certain way. I mean, it's in the limbic system of the brain. So it's something that people usually, I find, end up both talking about and having to deal with in their lives, is a willing to really open up. It's not an easy thing to do, and there's always resistance to it.
It sounds as if one big issue there is that the risk of doing that is that if the other person takes advantage of that and does that consistently, how that might be very destructive.
Exactly. And that's the fear. Especially with people that have come from, you know, a difficult family backgrounds where kids were not attended to, neglected, or even abused in a variety of ways. That's especially true. It's hard to develop trusting relationships when people have had that history, because they have to work through the pain of that history to get to a point where they can open and be vulnerable.
Even as a single person, to take the risk if you're alone, disappointed, not really connected, perhaps angry, is taking the risk of reaching out, doing something for a neighbor, for someone you meet, for a stranger, that, again, you could be taking advantage of. And obviously one can't do that indiscriminately, but if one is alone and wants to reach out, one has to take that chance in a safe way, I assume.
Yeah,
you know, I think that you guys are, the conversation is just making me think about one of the other kind of across the board pieces of information that came up in all of the articles that I read, was that another key piece of happiness, whether you're single or partnered, is your relationship with yourself. And I think for people who've gone through difficult early situations or difficult romantic relationships where they've felt rejected or been betrayed or something like that, it's really important to be able to work on finding that security within yourself, that relationship with yourself, knowing that you have worth, knowing that you have the capacity to love someone else and let someone love you, whether it's a friend or a romantic partner. Those are key. That's also a key component to long-term happiness, is really being able to do your own personal work so that you can be a good partner and be able to participate in receiving a loving partnership from another person.
That's an excellent point. And I was going to say, if you're going to be alone on Valentine's Day tomorrow, I would recommend, not being the psychologist here, I'm going to be more basic, that you treat yourself to your favorites, like a massage, a box of chocolates, a brisk walk, a favorite movie. Give yourself lots of love in your favorite ways. I mean, who would know better than you what could cheer you up and make you happy? And I know, too, we sometimes think of loving yourself as, we confuse that with being selfish. Even the Bible states, love one another as you love yourselves. So that's a component of being a good person, is building a healthy respect and concern for yourself.
Yeah.
No, it's really key. And actually, one of the, I'm trying to look and see which person was interviewed on this APA, the American Psychological Association, has a podcast called Speaking of Psychology. If anyone in your audience is interested in, and likes podcasts, there are a lot of interesting conversations that happen. But one of the people I read about said it's actually important to just be able to be a little bit selfish in your in good relationships. There has to be room for you to be able to take care of yourself and not just look to your partner to do that, but really to rely on yourself and know what you like. So if your partner isn't good at knowing which chocolates you like, buy yourself a box of chocolate. Buy yourself some flowers if that's what makes you happy and that's not the way your partner expresses their love toward you. It's really okay to do that for yourself. It's actually really important to know what makes you happy and to do that for yourself.
And it sounds like, especially with Bill's information, that there are penalties in life for remaining closed off and refusing to open up, that perhaps the risk is worth it to go ahead and step out and open up.
Go ahead.
Finish what you were saying.
There's one of the authors, or it's Dr. Arthur Aaron, who was reviewed. He developed the 36 questions that lead to love, and he was in a New York Times column. It's Aaron, A-R-O-N. And he talks about, he developed these questions that actually are supposed to lead to closeness or intimacy. And he talked about the ways we do that and that it's important to, you know, if you're making a friend or and friendships can lead to love relationships, certainly over time. He developed these questions that start with some simple questions that don't require too much risk at the beginning, but then they gradually move to more risk. And I think if we think about people we've met who maybe overshare early, if you will, or who only stick with the surface questions, we can notice from our own experience the way that we have developed intimacy over time with friendships. It really is a gradual kind of building on itself. It isn't a jump into the deep end opening up. And so taking those risks, you don't have to take the big risks at the beginning of a friendship or a relationship. And you find out if the other person is going to be able to be responsive to you, to hear you and validate your experience and then share in a mutual way.
Excellent.
I assume one can find those 36 questions by just Googling it or something?
I would think so. I would think so. It's Arthur Aaron, A-R-O-N, and he's a psychologist at Stony Brook University, it says. He's an APA fellow, and he's done some research on that. Yeah.
And I think when you look at overall, if you have good relationships or a good relationship, that another AMA study indicated that this sort of connection increases life expectancy, maintains a healthy heart, decreases depression, decreases doctor's visits, even decreases blood pressure. So let's step out and each of us decide we're going to take the risk to reach out and open up a little bit more on this Valentine's Day.
Yeah, even if it's with your friends or your family in your own home. Mm-hmm. I think that we can kind of get into a routine of just doing the same thing over and over again. And another piece of the research was that if you want to deepen your connections or people who are more satisfied over the long term in their relationships, they actually challenge themselves to do something a little bit more exciting. So And I mean, not too exciting. Some people don't want to go skydiving. That might be more than you want to do with your partner. But try a new restaurant or try a new recipe together and cook together. That they've shown that people have stronger sense of love and satisfaction in their relationships when they do something that's a little bit more exciting. Maybe not just the same old date night every week.
Good idea. Maybe we'll have you back on the show in a while to talk about which ones we all tried. That's cool. Now, moving on to another thought. Over the years, being married to a psychologist, Arliss would worry about the holidays because for some folks, they're depressing. We all have expectations. And how do we manage disappointment? And how do we offset if this kind of relationship is not settled and with us right now? So what do we do to offset that depression that might occur with a holiday like Valentine's Day?
Well, one of the things I think about is the value of focusing on what we do have that is working and being able to be grateful for that. And I think, if someone is really suffering from depression or if someone is suffering from feeling suicidal, which can often happen after the loss of a relationship, there's the National Suicide Hotline 988. Please reach out and talk to somebody. But if the depression you're speaking about, Suzanne, is sort of a lower level, just sadness and loneliness, I think it is really helpful to be able to look at what do I have that is working and that does feel good in my life? What do I feel grateful for?
Exactly. I love that. And it brings me back to Bill's point that an act of lovingness, loving those around you, doing something kind for others, gives you all the same good feelings that maybe being loved would give you. So reaching out, thinking of others, maybe people right down the neighborhood from you might need something positive. So maybe that's another way that we could enhance our own happiness.
There was an article I read recently, and at the chance of being overly simplistic, it gave two words that said that every relationship should have in it that seemed to make a really big difference. And I was kind of surprised, but not too surprised. The two words were thank you. And I'm thinking, well, okay, how does that does work in a practical way? For some reason, I think Suzanne must have read the article too, because she has increased her saying thank you recently. So I figured she must have read the same. Every morning we kind of sit around in the dark, get up early before we exercise and look at our phones like many people do and read all the news. And there are a lot of articles in there. And one of them was say thank you. Is there more to that than meets the eye?
Yeah, there's, I think, you know, it struck me one time years ago when I was doing some couples therapy. It just struck me in the middle of the therapy that there's three things that's really needed for a relationship, for a healthy relationship. And that is the ability to say thank you. In other words, show gratitude to the other and for the other. To really recognize the other. And the thank you is an act of gratitude. The second is, I'm sorry. So to be able to recognize the influence that one has on another, particularly in this case, particularly around maybe offending somebody, hurting someone. And to recognize that that offense carries with it pain, and to attempt to remedy that is to step forward and accept one's responsibility for it, maybe inducing some pain into the relationship. And the third thing, and these are obviously very simple, kind of, so to speak, rules to live by. They're not rules, actions to live by. Is to say, I love you. And that's to open up and to share one's heart with another person and to be available and to say, I'm here with you and for you and us. And these things are so fundamental, and yet it's the rare, when I would say it's the rare relationship that actually shares all three of those things. Lots of times people share one, or they are engaged in two. The more often, the more that they do of these three things, I think the closer people feel. Because it's a constant reminder of intimacy and togetherness when you're recognizing the impact, whether it be difficult impact or hurtful impact or helpful or loving impact. It's also important to recognize.
And I think the recipient of, say, I'm sorry, would understand that's a helpful thing, a helpful response, and right. It helps both the person who is offended and that you need to apologize to, and the person who acted that way to understand, whoops, I better check myself out here. I remember one time, I do not know what bee was up my bonnet, but my little beautiful girl was about 2 years old, and she came into the room and said something, and for some reason I said, just don't talk to me right now. I might have been busy or something, I don't remember. And she looked up at me with the kindest eyes and said, are you tired, Mommy? And I, of course, began to apologize profusely, but the fact was that she was very forgiving and understood completely. And it, to me, it's always been a good example of when you need to say, I'm sorry, it helps you and the person that needs that response. So it can be very positive.
Yeah, healing on both ends. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there's lots of attachment research that says that a secure relationship or feeling security in the relationship doesn't come from a lack of conflict or a lack of rupture. It comes from a lack of security requires rupture, requires some conflict and repair. So for people who say, oh, I have the best relationship, we don't fight ever, we've been together 5 years and we've never had a fight, that's actually not necessarily indicative of a secure relationship. It might be indicative of two people who really are fearful of conflict. But really what makes a strong, secure relationship is being able to make a mistake and then repair the damage that mistake caused, and do it early. Don't let it build and build and build, but really take care of it in the moment and feel that healing over and over and over again.
Absolutely. And
yeah, really important to remember.
We all could benefit, every single person, from these lessons and these suggestions.
Are there any in this day and age Are we unique in any way, or has humanity always been this way, requiring the same things? Are there any special stressors in our culture? I know there are culture wars and even legislators making laws about how people should think and feel. Do we have any unusual special stressors that you guys run across?
Well, I think it's interesting because I think the pandemic was a stressor.
Absolutely.
And yes. Certainly still is. And there's not a lot of, there's maybe some early research being done on the impact of that the pandemic had on relationships. But some of what I was able to glean was that actually for people who are in relationships and living with partners, especially when your partner feels like your best friend, the pandemic was actually much less stressful for those people than for people who were alone and who didn't have access to some of those other social supports that we would have had access to pre-pandemic, you know, when everything shut down or the need to socially isolate. So certainly that's a recent stressor that actually has shown that relationships have helped people for the most part. I mean, you know, not everybody was helped by that. If there's violence in your home or that isolation is more difficult, but for people who had adequate relationships, that actually helped them through the stresses of especially the early phases of the pandemic.
And definitely we can all see the impact of all that happened during COVID, which brings up another point I wanted to just touch on, that sadly, for all the good we can gain from a good relationship, the opposite is also true. A good relationship releases wonderful chemicals that are reduce stress and all sorts of physical manifestations of happiness. But the opposite is also true. In a toxic relationship, that stress hormones can negatively impact our health and well-being. I know Arliss once established a divorce support group, and he has said in the past, there's some things worse than divorce. So what do we need to say, perhaps, about what to do if you're in a toxic relationship and you need to address that?
Well, therapy is certainly helpful, I think.
Yes.
You know, and there are different, I think it's John Gottman's research that things that create toxicity in a relationship are criticism, defensiveness, contempt, and stonewalling. And he also calls it like kitchen sinking, where you bring up all the transgressions and all the bad things in every argument, and you throw everything in the kitchen sink. Those are the kinds of things that can create negative relationships that if those things are happening in your relationship, or if you're having the same argument over and over again, certainly seeking help for couples therapy, or if your partner isn't willing to find some individual therapy, to really be able to, again, do that work on your relationship with yourself, to be able to assess whether the relationship is good for you or not, whether it's helping you sort of expand and become a better person, or whether it's actually sort of causing you to be a lesser version of yourself, someone you don't like as much.
In the area, speaking of divorce, I worked for years in an ultra-conservative environment around ultra-conservative churches, and was a part of that for a long time. And divorce was anathema. It was the word you didn't use, and people tolerated all kinds of bad situations because in their teachings and their belief, you just didn't do that. However, reality sets in. It does happen. There are people in our listening audience, and maybe up to 50% of the people who get married somewhere in that do end up in divorce. One thing that I found and we found, one church took the risk. They reached out to me and said, you know, we got all these people getting divorced. Is there anything that you think we might be able to do? Well, we started a divorce recovery group. And over the period of the next 7 years, there must have been, and I'm not exaggerating, 1,000 people who came through that. I wouldn't say there were some graduates, if you will, but we just had a support group. It grew too large to really fit exactly what would be good group therapy, but it was support. And knowing that someone else is experiencing the same thing or nearly the same thing or going through the same kinds of losses was very, very helpful to these people. And actually, I think it was therapy for all of us just to sit there and offer support, listen to the issues, knowing we weren't alone. What would you all suggest for people maybe going through that kind of thing? And there may be resources, I'm sure there are, locally where people can reach out to get support.
Yeah, I would. I agree with you, Arliss. Again, back to connections. And in times of difficulty, maybe even tragedy, people do best because they come together. I mean, again, it's in our DNA. If we're wounded, we generally try to find solace in with other people. If someone's in a difficult marriage and they want help, I think they should seek it. Meaning, lots of times I hear people say, "Well, I'm really struggling in my marriage, but my partner won't go to couples therapy." It's like, well, that's a difficult situation, but maybe if you go to individual therapy, that will help you be more aware of what's going on in the relationship and be helpful for you to deal with the stressors that you're going through. And sometimes that can eventually turn into couples therapy, especially if the partner sees that there's a benefit to the therapy that the other spouse is going through. So again, it comes, you know, when we talk about going to therapy, we're talking about connection again, we're talking about relationship. It's pervasive. We need relationship. We're not meant to be alone. we're meant to connect.
And sometimes the best answer is to move on from something that is so maybe tragic to you personally or to your children or to you, and very hard decision to make and shouldn't be made impulsively and without making an effort. But those who choose to move on as a single person through divorce, it can be very positive for that person if and when that's the decision that needs to be made. You may have a perspective on that as well.
Yeah, I think that if you are in a relationship, and again, I'm going to expand this to be a friendship or yes, not just a romantic partnership, but if you are in a relationship that is actually helping you become a better person or helping you sort of expand yourself, the research talk about this self-expansion theory, which means you become more yourself, you like who you are, you feel like you're becoming a better person and learning and growing in your relationship, then great. I mean, stay. But if your relationship is with somebody who really doesn't help you grow and with whom you are unable to grow yourself, then just the simple act of getting out of that relationship can free you up to learn to grow. And I think sometimes processing the loss of the relationship, or maybe grieving what the relationship cost you in terms of your own growth, that's part of moving on. But then you can continue to grow yourself as a single person and grow yourself in your relationships, which hopefully will open up an opportunity, if you want to be in another relationship, to find a relationship that is a better fit, that helps you grow as a person.
I saw an article, again, part of that early morning reading that we do, a woman who's, I think, 104, and journalists are always asking, what is the secret of longevity? Well, she gave a couple of answers about positive thinking and good health, good eating, good exercise. And then she said, I stay away from toxic people. And
yeah.
So I thought, hey, you know, there's a lot more to that. I wish I could hear her speak more about that.
Yeah, that there's great wisdom in that.
And
it requires one's ability to be able to see what's toxic.
Yes.
Which is sometimes difficult for people.
And sometimes therapy can be a great facilitator of understanding these kinds of difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's very well put.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah, I actually...
Go ahead.
Okay. There's again, in some of the research that I was reading on this, there's actually... I think they did this on college students, and they did say that once you get older and you know yourself better, you're maybe more able to assess this. But really what the research shows is that often young people are not actually as aware of when their relationship, their romantic relationship or friendship is toxic. And it's often a roommate or a mom who has a better sense of that the relationship isn't as good for you as you think it is, and that the people who are in the relationship often don't have the best view of whether it's working for you. So I think it is maybe important to rely on some of those other key people in your lives who really care about your well-being. If they're saying to you, gosh, I have concerns, to try to be willing to listen and be curious about what those concerns might be.
Something in the real here and now that I'd like to hear you guys address. All of the relationships or dating apps where you just can pick up your phone and meet somebody in a moment, either online or otherwise. Give us some advice for the audience on how to use those properly, if you have some ideas on that.
Oh, good grief. I think it's okay to be choosy, is what I would say. Again, the research is showing that we are expecting more of relationships now than we did 20 years ago or 50 years ago. We are expecting our relationships to help us grow as people, and not everybody is going to be a good fit for that. So it's okay to take your time and try to build the intimacy over time rather than just jumping in physically or emotionally, to really give yourself some time to assess whether this is a good relationship for you.
And I think that finding a good relationship, establishing it, and maintaining it is well worth what effort it takes and what openness is required. Actually, love and kinship and connection with others has a real scientific basis. It's not just romantic love. Love is more than an isolated feeling, according to Dr. Melissa Velas. Science now can tell us that loving relationships give off various neurotransmitters and hormones that affect us systematically. And dopamine, which makes us feel good, is intensified when we feel love and positive responses for another. And the research shows that that remains enhanced over time. And as the relationship develops, another wonderful neurotransmitter, oxytocin, the bonding hormone, which gives us that warm, fuzzy feeling, is good for general health too. So there are lots of wonderful side effects of having a good relationship. In addition to happiness, there's health, and we would say that the positive aspects of this are well worth working toward and reaching out for.
I do want to just add before we are out of time today that I think there's some new or growing research on people who are single and who are choosing not to be in relationship. And I think there is a stigma, and I've certainly had patients talk with me about this, patients who are single, who are relatively happy being single. There's a stigma about being single in our culture, and that there's sort of this pressure to be in relationship with other people and or be in a romantic relationship. You know, and I just want to put out there that it is not abnormal to be able to be happy and single. I think there are unhappy single people, and again, that's where I would say there's work that could be done on themselves to help them find that happiness. But there are lots and lots of people. I think the research stated 3 out of 10 people, so 30% of people, are single. And I think that number is growing, and it is possible to that there's nothing wrong with being happy and being single.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean there's something wrong with the person.
And I'd like to ask you and Bill, you're caretakers. I was for many, many years, maybe still am in some ways. How do you take care of yourselves? Everybody's silent, huh?
Go for it, Bill.
Oh, you still?
That's a very good question. I think mostly I turn to my close relationships. I turn to how I care for myself is. I turn to people to connect with, because that's the most, in the end, it strikes me as the most nurturing thing I can do for myself. Now, I'll qualify that by also saying, I spend a lot of time alone, meaning I make efforts to be with myself, to sit with myself, sometimes meditating, sometimes simply just being with myself and relaxing and opening up to the moment that I'm in. So those are the two primary ways. And again, what am I talking about? I'm talking about relationship with myself and relationship with others. And I have my own spiritual practices. My life is set up for a lot of nurturing, actually. Both in terms of giving to others as well as receiving from others. So I have hobbies. I ride horses. In normal times I ski. I can't do that right now. But, I stay active, but mostly it's making contact with the people I love. And I'll agree with the 104-year-old woman or whatever. I try to avoid hanging out with toxic people.
You know, we read about one young woman who had a progressive illness and had to be in a wheelchair. And she was thinking of ending her life. She was very depressed. And a bird hit the window right next to where she was sitting and was badly injured. And she picked up the bird and started tending to that bird. And the bird responded to her. And she took care of that bird and nursed it back to good health. And in so doing, she reported that she forgot about that depression so much, and she focused on her newfound friend. So, like Yuri Bropfenbrenner said, everyone needs something positive, something strong, something beautiful in a relationship or a connection. It could be a bird or a dog or going to see your horses, like Bill said, but we all reach out for connection.
Michelle, what would you add?
Well, I would say one of the things that I think I have developed a practice of is really just being grateful in the moment for the small thing that I have, the bowl of yogurt and granola and berries that is just so beautiful on a, you know, on a sunny morning, that I can just appreciate the all of the sensory experiences of that, or just really practicing opening my heart in the moment to my cat, my daughter, myself, and just taking a deep breath and feeling connected to myself and to the earth, to nature, those sorts of things. That really helps me, I think, take care of myself every moment. It's available every time you breathe.
Do you still do some dancing? I heard you did once upon a time.
Oh, gosh. Yes, I do.
Cool.
I tap dance. That brings me lots of joy and connection, because I've been able to develop my dance friends, and those relationships is lovely too. So, yeah, I'm still dancing.
We have about a minute and a half, and I feel very connected to you guys. Can you?
Wonderful.
Let's end with some words of wisdom. Everybody say something positive here at the end. We have a minute.
Oh, on the spot.
I'll start off. I have a bona fide tip for relationships. They looked at a lifetime study, another one, and they pulled out a number of things that help, you know, all the usual love, concern, respect, etc. But one of the things that I loved was making every holiday special. Celebrate, they said. Celebrate birthdays, celebrate Valentine's Day, celebrate. And so we've really followed that rule. I read that early in our marriage, and it adds a lot of fun and specialness. So remember that, everyone. Those couples who stayed together many years reported they always celebrated special things.
All right, more words there. We got about 30 seconds.
I'm going to say from the research is keep things interesting in your relationships. Do things that are outside your normal routine and share them together.
Lovely.
And I would that is recognize how your partner is actually incredibly interesting. Even though you think you know everything about them, you don't. There's always more to learn about the other.
Excellent. Thank you guys today. And really, I think it was a very excellent program. Thank you guys for your wisdom. Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you, Wallace. Yes. Thank you, Bill.
And
thank you, Michelle.
Oh, thank you for having us on.
This is KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org. Please listen and have a good Valentine's Day and an every day of your life as you find health and happiness. Good night.